good, everybody. Welcome to another Gold Standard podcast, part of the Niners Nation Podcast Network. I am Rob Stats Guerrera. He is Levin Black. What's going on, Levin?
Not a whole lot. I'm ready to record. It's been a long bye week. I'm ready for some football. I'm actually, it's kind of a love-hate thing that I have to wait all the way until Sunday night because yes. It's nice to be in prime time, but I have Sunday tickets so I can watch any of the games. So it just means I have to wait longer.
This is not a good week of games. You know, there's only one game with two teams above 500 this entire slate of games. It's really
it's not the
bad.
49ers.
No, God, no, it's definitely not. If you're new to this show, you get the hot takes mostly from me and the cold truth mostly from the human wet blanket, Levin Black. We always remind you, please rate, review, and subscribe to the Niners Nation Podcast Network. Last week, we had a review from Buff Latina, who called you, Levin, George Wade Barnes. And neither one of us really knew who the hell George Wade Barnes was. Buff Latina has checked back in, and according to this person, George Wade Barnes is a gamer who plays frequently with Markiplier, a famous YouTuber. The comment was related to the fact that both Wade and Levin could be voice doubles. Check out his channel, LordMinion777, and tell me that I'm wrong. So there you go. You have a voice double.
Guy must sound sexy as hell.
Yes, or sounds like an asshole, either one.
You can be both.
In fact, many people are. We have a lot to get to on today's show. DeForest Buckner gave a press conference because, in case you haven't heard, he used to play for the 49ers and they play the Colts this week. Mike Shanahan spoke yesterday. Jimmy Garoppolo spoke yesterday. I don't know that we learned a whole lot necessarily, Levin.
No, the same questions asked could have been asked a week ago.
With the Buckner stuff, this is my takeaway, because Kyle Shanahan said yesterday that Javon Kinlaw's knee injury is a significant problem, that it's basically stopped his development as a player. And the benefit of the Buckner trade was supposed to be Kinlaw and Ayuk, right? Like, hey, we traded away DeForest Buckner, but we got Javon Kinlaw, who's a pretty good defensive tackle, and we drafted this guy in Brandon Ayuk that we think is really awesome. Now Kinlaw's development is, you know, come to a grinding halt here, and the team is actively ignoring Brandon Ayuk. That's what was supposed to make the Buckner trade palatable. And instead, both of the things that we got for it are basically contributing nothing.
Yeah. Like, if they're contributing what anything, it's not great. You know, Kinlaw's been okay. He hasn't been able to develop much of a pass rush yet.
He's been fine.
But he's been really good against the run overall. It comes out to being a quality player, but not, you know, anything Buckner-like, which that would be hard to get to. And Ayuk this year, I don't think it's his fault, but, you know, he has the worst catch percentage on the team other than Travis Benjamin, whose catch percentage is zero because he hasn't gotten a reception, but does have a target. But yeah, I mean, he's caught 8 of 15 targets. Most of the targets that have come his way have been off target. But it's nothing to write home about. He only has 90 yards. So even though he's playing, he's not adding a whole lot. Like I said, I don't think it's necessarily his fault. I don't think he's necessarily without blame either, but I think I would put it at a good like 80% in the coaching realm in terms of why Ayuk is not producing.
We don't have to go and relitigate this entire thing, but I just want to state for the record, since it was sort of dominating Twitter today, I think the 49ers made the wrong choice by choosing Eric Armstead over DeForest Buckner. I think they should have kept Buckner, but I will say, once you decide to trade Buckner, I think the 49ers got a decent return for him. It's just, like we said, the players necessarily are not being used or can't be used because of injury. But I don't think that, like, the Buckner trade was this huge disaster for the 49ers. They got good value out of it. Sometimes you make the picks and they don't work out as well as you would have hoped. But DeForest Buckner for the 13th overall pick, I still think is a good trade.
Yeah, that's not a bad trade. I mean, there were two surprising parts when it came to that trade. The first was the trade happened. I mean, everybody was caught off guard by it. There were no rumors prior to. And the second part was, wow, they actually got the 13th pick. Like, that's more than I would have thought they could get for a player that's, I think, around football circles is pretty well respected, but he wasn't a household name. He wasn't seen as this dominant player. He was seen as a really good player that could make some Pro Bowls, but doesn't put up eye-popping stats. You know, to get the 13th pick, I think most people were surprised that they got that good of value in the trade. But time will tell, ultimately. I mean, hindsight is hindsight, but ultimately what's going to decide this trade is 4 or 5 years from now, when you look back, if neither Kinlaw or Ayuk are on this team and they never really amounted to anything, you know, if Ayuk's rookie year is the high point, then this trade's going to be looked back as, would they have won the Super Bowl or won a Super Bowl if they didn't make that trade? Like, obviously, Buckner was here for the Super Bowl year, but, you know, that could be seen as the time where the Super Bowl team ended. Like, that's the potential, in my opinion. I think the potential is to look back at this era, if you want to call it an era at this point, and go, well, that was a team that was ready to win a Super Bowl, nearly did, and then they made the Buckner trade, and it was never the same.
We'll find out. I mean, God, I hope not. It's one thing if Ayuk flops because he's just not good enough. Okay. But to have it go down the way it's going down, that's the frustrating thing for me. Like, you know, you're going down without a fight, essentially. You're playing these games with one hand tied behind your back, and that's the frustration point.
You know, I've had a lot of thoughts about Ayuk this week and kind of had a couple clear thoughts where I'm kind of getting to the point where I have concrete opinions, even though we still don't really know what's going on. That's one of the hardest parts about this, is that nobody's gotten to the bottom of why isn't Ayuk playing, because the only thing that's been offered was, well, he got hurt and he wasn't able to get ready for week one. Well, week one was over a month ago and he played with the number ones all of preseason. So missing a handful of days worth of practice, which he did prior to week one, doesn't explain 6 weeks worth of this or five games worth of this. So there's something else going on that nobody knows. And a couple concrete thoughts I had was, if this continues, then Ayuk has been very quiet to this point. But if this continues come off season, I would not be surprised one bit if he demands a trade, goes public with a trade. Because if this is how you're going to be treated, why wouldn't you?
Right.
I
mean, so
I would not blame him. Right. I would not blame him one bit if this season continues this way and Kyle plays this hardball, tough love, sophomore receiver thing. I would not blame him one bit for saying, I want off this team. You purposely badmouthed me all season. You had John Lynch doing freaking press conferences every week, badmouthing me. You yourself badmouthed me, and I did everything you asked. Like, if you watch the film, he is really, really good at blocking. Like, he has been extremely aggressive at blocking and doing a good job blocking for the run game. So this isn't a case of somebody that's only cares if the ball is coming his way. And I would have a hard time if I was in Ayuk's shoes keeping my mouth shut at this point, because it's one thing if you're not being utilized by your team. You know, if that was just the case, you know, I wouldn't think he has cause to speak up. But the John Lynch thing just rubs me the wrong way.
You're still bothered by this.
Yes. Like, I was bothered when he did the KNBR interview a week ago where he criticized Ayuk and said he's just not where we hoped he would be. And then he does that sit down puff piece with Mayoko I don't know if it was like Monday. I can't remember if it was last week or early this week, but he's twice since the last game played for the 49ers gone and spoken publicly bad-mouthing Ayuk. That would be a really hard thing for me to keep my mouth shut about. If I was getting bad-mouthed and I haven't spoken up, I haven't gone public like most wide receivers would do saying, I want the ball more. It really rubs me the wrong way with John Lynch. And that was the other concrete opinion that I had. I think something is going on behind closed doors. I think that there is friction somewhere, because John Lynch's body language in that interview, it was odd. You know what I mean? Like, if he's just coming out to, like, you know, oh, it's the bye week, we got, you know, either I or Kyle, and Kyle was busy with his father's thing, getting his, you know, Ring of Honor up in Denver. So John did the, you know, essentially like a bye week state of the franchise kind of interview. They do it most years. But his body language was just off to me. And to me, it looked like somebody that was uncomfortable.
And which is amazing because he was so, the questions in that interview were like, so it's such a non-threatening interview.
I would say it's very likely John Lynch knew the questions beforehand.
God.
Yeah. Put it that way. John Lynch seemed to know the questions beforehand, which is a journalistic integrity issue, in my opinion.
Yeah, but then think about how bad his reaction was to the question about the crisis. And if he knew it was coming, that's even worse.
Right. So I think something is off behind closed doors. I don't know if it's the players, the locker room versus coaching and front office, because it could be that. It could be, you know, a Jimmy Lance issue where the locker room split a little bit and it's just never made it public. Or if it's a John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan struggle going on behind closed doors. But something to me is off and John Lynch is aware of it and is part of it, to where there's friction there. And he just seemed like a guy that was uncomfortable, that wasn't his normal demeanor. Something just seems to have changed, in my opinion. I think this offseason will be very interesting, because I think some things are going to shake out and we're going to find out some things were going on behind closed doors.
Especially if the 49ers start winning next year. Because then people are a little bit looser with their stuff, like, because they always try and turn those struggles into the reason why the team is now successful. Like, oh, if we didn't go through that last year, we wouldn't be as good this year. So I think if that ever happens, we'll find out some stuff. Yeah. I agree with you. I think there's more to the story of this year.
It's the players that will be not on the team next year. The players that are here this year but aren't here next year.
True.
Could be speaking the truth, you know, wherever Jimmy goes. If it's something to do with Jimmy and Lance, where there was friction, where some players spoke up about wanting Lance to start or whatever it could be, Jimmy will probably at some point talk about it once he's off the team. You know what I mean? Like, it will come at some point. The light will be shown on what happened, where the team was in terms of how many people wanted Lance and how many people, like, it could be something like Lance is entrenched as the starter next year and is doing well, and they ask some of the veterans, like, what changed this year, and they say something like, nothing, he was this good last year.
Right,
you know. Yeah. That's God. Happened before, where somebody says something, they don't quite realize what they're saying. Under something along that analogy, there has literally happened something very close to that has happened in the past with other players, where they go, you know, what changed for this guy this year, and they go, nothing, he was this good last year. And it's like basically saying, yeah, the coaches wouldn't play him last year.
So you talked about Jimmy. I don't know if he'll say that, because here's the thing about Jimmy Garoppolo in press conferences. And this is something that came up yesterday. Jimmy just, he never, I don't know if he's trying to like be the cool, calm, collected leader guy, but he never shows any urgency. He was asked yesterday if this game essentially is a must win, because the 49ers are 2-3. The division is basically already out of reach for them. And a lot of people like me think if the team's going to make the playoffs, they got to win this game. This is the wolves are out for Kyle Shanahan. Like, criticism has been coming this week and these last 2 weeks like it has never come before. And they asked Jimmy if it's a big game, and he says, well, they're all big games. You know, we prepare the game. Dude, why isn't anybody on this team sounding the alarm? That's what I want to know. Who's the person that's like, hey, we got to get our shit together. Enough of this. Like, enough of this losing. You know, like, Kinlaw, Kyle said yesterday, well, he's got to get his knee right and then he'll develop. Oh, Brandon Ayuk, he's got to take strides and then he'll be the player we want. Oh, Jimmy Garoppolo, if he could just stay healthy. This team is always one step away, Levin. And in the meantime, they suck. And it's frustrating.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else to say other than it's frustrating. It's frustrating that from a fan perspective that we don't get answers that most other franchises would. Because most other franchises, you would see the media hounding on these things and wouldn't let a coach off the hook. And our media does. They will purposely give the coaches and the players outs when they ask questions by, either giving multiple questions at once, you know, ask the difficult one, but then follow it up with a secondary easy one so then they can just ignore that tough one, or by phrasing things in a manner where they don't truly have to answer it, or just allowing them not to answer it and not following up on it. And that one happens quite often where something is asked, especially to Kyle, and Kyle will answer something that's related to the topic, but not the specific question. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen that many times where you ask him about the passing game and what's wrong with it or something like that, and he'll be like, oh, well, we just got to run better routes here. You know, he'll say something when reality is it's a quarterback problem and nobody forced him to go there. You know what I mean? He gets out without having to really say anything controversial or answer the question.
Kyle did that yesterday for one of the answers. He was talking about like kind of what's sort of wrong with the offense, what they need to do. And one of the things he mentioned, and I'm trying to find it quickly as I say, is he mentioned explosive plays in the explosive runs, not explosive. He's specifically said explosive runs. And it's like, dude, you know you're not getting any explosive passes. So did you just leave that out because you don't think the offense is capable of it? Or are you like once again trying to shield Jimmy Garoppolo from all criticism whatsoever? Like, that just bothered me. It's the
explosive run comment bothered me because do you know how rare an explosive run is? Like, if that's what you're counting on to get the offense going, you're going to have problems most games. Because it's pretty rare to have an explosive run. You don't get those every game.
I want to say one more thing before we take a break, because I've been on Twitter for most of the day on Wednesday, and one of the things I saw is people tweeting out something like, doesn't anyone have anything positive to say about the 49ers? No. Like, no, dude. And here's why. We are worn down as a fan base, Levin. Do you know the last time the 49ers won a game by more than one score?
No.
It was October 25th, 2020, which will be almost, it will be 364 days from when they play the Colts on Sunday. That was the Patriot game. They won 33-6. That is the last time the 49ers won a game by more than double digits. By the way, they've only won 5 games since that day. So that tells you where the franchise is and why we're not necessarily super positive. Think about this. Since that game against the Patriots, the 49ers have played 15 games. 10 of those games have been one-score games. Win or lose, 10 of them, 10 of the 15. So think about what that's like for us as fans, right? We're sitting there on the edge of our seats, basically, living and dying on every play. Every game seems like it's a winnable game. And for 10 out of the last 15, which the 49ers have lost 10 out of those 15 games, it's always, oh, if we just did this play, right? If we just did this, if this player just did this thing differently, if Kyle made this decision. So it always feels like we are so close, and then right at the end, we get punched in the gut. And so, yeah, I'm sorry if I'm really negative all the time, but after you keep getting punched in the gut again and again and again, you're not really super thrilled, right?
I mean, the team's lost 3 straight games after starting 2-0. What do you expect? You expect a whole bunch of rainbows? I mean, this isn't going to be a super positive time when you're on a 3-game losing streak. Those type of comments, they actually remind me of the parents in like Little League, Pee Wee football, whatever you want to call it, where every player needs equal amounts of playing time. Everybody needs to be able to play and get equal opportunity. You know, if your kid sucks, sorry. Like, he or she might get a little bit of, like, every kid should get into the game when they're young. You know what I mean? Every kid should get into the game, but the objective is to win. Like, that's the objective. And I hate people that go, winning and losing don't matter. Yes, it does. You know what life is about? Doesn't matter what your career is. You have little battles every single day that you need to win more often than you lose, because if you lose more often than you win, you're probably going to end up fired at some point. Like that's what sports do, in my opinion. Sports is very similar to the way of life. When you're at work, what's the atmosphere like? It's like a locker room. You know what I mean? It's like your team. You got to work together. There's a reason why when you work, your companies will constantly say, we need to work together as a team. We're really a team here. And it's because it is a lot like a sports team. Like I hate the type of people that have that mentality that winning and losing doesn't matter, that, you know, everybody needs equal chances. Like, no, life is not about that. You know what I mean? Like if you're really good at something at work and somebody really sucks at it, I don't think your boss is going to ask the person who really sucks at it to do it all the time.
First of all, don't steal my whiny person voice. Okay. That's the first thing. Second of all, I can totally picture you getting pissed at a coach at a Little League game for putting Johnny in left field when Johnny can't track a fly ball. Like, I could just see you like, oh, God, they better not hit it to left because Johnny ain't catching it.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to be the vocal type. I mean, I'm definitely not that parent in the stands yelling and screaming and being an idiot and losing sight of the fact that they're little kids. I'm just saying, like, not everybody should get every equal playing time just because. Like, that's not the way life works.
All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll get into the Colts game a little bit, talk about some of the things we want to see. And I have a theory about this game, Levin, and it comes back to a movie that came out almost 20 years ago.
Well, I can't wait to punch holes in it.
This is the Gold Standard Podcast. Okay, Levin, we have made it through the slog that is the bye week. By the way, the toughest part of the bye week is the off day before you play, like the Tuesday of this week, because it's like you're desperate for the team to come back. They finally give a couple press conferences on Monday, so you're starting to get your juices flowing for the game, and then bam, Tuesday comes and nobody says anything because it's an off day, and you're like right back in that purgatory. But we have made it through. It is game week. Niners are in prime time. NBC, the Colts, for some reason, and I have no idea why this is, the 49ers are favored, which is staggering to me because I wouldn't favor the 49ers to do a damn thing. The spread is Niners by 4.5 right now, according to DraftKings Sportsbook. How do you feel about that, first of all?
I don't know. I don't find it too surprising. Like you said, the Niners have lost every game by one possession. Like the team can easily be a 4-1 team right now. You know what I mean? They have a lot of talent. They could be a lot better. Right now, it's still early enough in the season that Vegas is going to look at it and say the team with a lot of talent that's been losing close games is likely going to push bets more. And that's, let's not forget, betting lines are not predictions. They are based on what they think will push the most money into the pot for them.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm too bitter, but like to me, the favoring the 49ers, like I don't see it at all. The Colts are playing well. They at least have shown some flashes of making some explosive plays on offense. 49ers haven't shown anything. They haven't shown anything on offense since week one against the crap Lions.
Well, they got Jimmy back this week, so I'm just kidding. I mean, I said it after going into the bye week last week on our Gold Standard. This week will tell us everything we need to know, in my opinion. If the Niners come out and look like the team that's been there the last 3 weeks, they struggle offensively. Just seems like even when they do put up points, it's just, you know, a big struggle. I mean, no other way to put it. If that's the team that shows up, this is going to be a team that's going to be lucky to win 8 games. If they come out and they're executing better, the players are actually blocking like they're supposed to be blocking and not making the mistakes that we've seen, and Kyle is better on his game, he gets some of those plays where you go, wow, how did that guy get completely wide open? Then maybe this is still a playoff team. This week is the week that we know because this was the bye week. If they still have issues, they're not getting fixed. You don't have another bye week to fix them.
Before we went to break, I mentioned that this game is like a movie from 20 years ago. And that movie is Pool Hall Junkies, Levin. And I don't know if you've seen the movie, but I just showed you the clip before we hit record. And for people that haven't seen the movie, there's a great scene with Christopher Walken. He's trying to pump up his like protege that's a pool player. He's got to play a big game coming up. He's trying to pump him up. He tells this awesome story about a lion, about how the lion is sitting under a tree and it's so hot and the lion doesn't want to move. And the jackals come out and they're bothering him. And more people are bothering the lion because he's not doing anything. And then one day the lion gets up and tears the shit out of everybody. Eats everything in his way, just destroys everything. Because every once in a while, the lion's got to show the jackals who he is. That's what this game is, Levin. This is Kyle Shanahan's got to be the lion in this game, right? The criticism is out. The torches and pitchforks are out. The fan base is turning on him. Everybody's doubting him as a coach. They're doubting him as a play caller. They're doubting and bringing up his record that's a losing record in 5 years now. He's got to get up and tear the shit out of everybody. And it's a perfect week to do it, coming off a bye against a bad defense. What do you think of that analogy? And do you think he can do it?
First off, in terms of the analogy, I wondered if that's what the Detroit Lions have been doing for 70 years and they just forgot to get up. Like, they forgot the last part.
They're still waiting.
But in terms of Kyle, like, yeah, we haven't seen one of those games yet this year. We have not seen one of those games where you're just shaking your head going, that's Kyle. So glad he's on our team, you know. And we normally have a handful of those games every single year where the offense is just doing so many things where the defense never knows what's coming. And so the offense just keeps gashing them, keeps scoring and putting up points. And it's just one of those Kyle Shanahan games. Like, I think all fans know what we're talking about. There are just games where you can tell Kyle is three steps ahead of the defense every single time. We have not seen him be three steps ahead. We have not seen him be one step ahead. We've seen him basically be average at his best. We've seen him do okay in the Detroit game. And since then, we've pretty much seen somebody that the defense is a step or two ahead of.
This is the week, man. It's got to happen this week. I will tweet out the clip from @NNPodcasts on Twitter and probably from my handle as well, @StatsOnFire. So if you haven't seen it, you'll be able to see the clip. It is fantastic, and Christopher Walken is a treasure. But I hope we see it. This has got to be the week that Kyle Shanahan, you know what he needs to do, Levin? He needs to bring back the Shanahan hat. Bring back the red hat. Don't say anything about it. Don't talk to the team about it. Just wear the hat on game day. Just show up on game day. Boom. Put the hat on your head. That'll be the signal to everybody that enough is enough. Whatever happened in the past is the past. Let's get back to who we are. We're going to come in here and we're going to blow the doors off of everybody. That's what I want to see on Sunday night. Prime time in front of the world. Bring back the Shanahan hat.
Let me finish this segment with two things. One, can we win a freaking home game?
Yes. Oh my God. I know.
And two, Kyle needs to be the master of the offense again. He needs to remember he's the master, not Sean McVay. Because this season, it sure looks like Sean McVay's been the master of that offense. And that maybe we should be talking about Sean McVay being the smarter offensive-minded coach. I've hinted at that before. I think that that is starting to become a real debate that Kyle is losing. That it goes Andy Reid, Sean McVay, and then a level down is Kyle Shanahan and the others.
And I think Kyle knows it. And I think it bothers Kyle. So that's all even more of an incentive for him to be the lion, get off his ass, and start tearing it up. You know what play we haven't seen at all this year? And I'm really surprised because Kyle has gone to it multiple times in the past, especially when the offense has needed a jolt. And that's the play where Juszczyk leaks out of the backfield. It's a play action. He pretends like he's blocking. He goes right up the gut and then runs almost like a wheel route to the sideline. He's been open on it like every time they run it. And I feel like the 49ers have gone to him with some success. I haven't seen that this year. But like, they need to go back to the staple plays like that, just to, like Jimmy said, feel like you can actually move the ball down the field, that the offense doesn't have to be such a grinding struggle all the time.
See, I think that's one of the things defenses have adjusted to this offseason. Juice and Kittle, if they leave, they have somebody keyed on them. If they leave the line of scrimmage, somebody is following them. The leakouts have not been there this year, and I think that's a big part of why the offense has struggled. The fact that defenses have said, we're not going to allow these guys to leak out and catch us off guard and get some big momentum-building play like that. It doesn't matter, like I said, whether it's been Kittle or Juice. When they leave the backfield, there's almost always somebody that's keyed on them. They might not be right there in their face already, but there's normally a linebacker or a safety that is keyed on them. And the moment they start to leak, you see that person start crashing down already to the point that there's not really an advantage there. The other problem is you know, that wheel route that you're talking about with Juice, that's a very long developing play because he has to feint like he's going to block, then leak out and get downfield and get turned upfield on the wheel route before you can throw it. And the pass blocking hasn't been there. Like that right side of the line, you're getting 3 seconds at most. And most of the time it's 2 seconds. Like that right side of the line does not hold up.
It has been dicey. And that was one of the questions I wanted Kyle Shanahan asked yesterday was, how close is Brunskill to getting benched? Now he was asked that, but unfortunately it was followed up with another soft serve ice cream question immediately afterwards. And so Kyle Shanahan just chose not to answer the difficult question because he's a smart man. And so we never actually got a real answer to how close Brunskill is to getting benched. Kyle just said, we think we can win with him, which is an odd thing to say about a guard. Because like, I could understand that about a quarterback, but a guard?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can win with him. Doesn't matter because what you think and what's happening are two different things. Like what you think can happen does not matter whatsoever. It matters what happens on the field. And on the field, Brunskill is getting his ass handed to him week in and week out. He is, without a doubt, been the worst starting player on this team this season.
Yes. Yep.
Like it's not even close, I don't think. Like McGlinchey might be second, which is the whole problem, is that two guys lined up next to each other on the offensive line are probably had the two worst seasons on the team. But Brunskill, there's no reason, in my opinion, to not try somebody else at that spot at this point. Like Compton, he mentioned, would be the person on game days that would likely go in if like Brunskill were to get injured. Why not try him out? Because what we're seeing from Brunskill isn't good. So there's no point of continuing this.
That's the point, yeah, that I think a lot of 49er fans feel. What is the point of continuing down this road? You know what you're getting. It's not good enough. Maybe the other player will be worse. Maybe. But there's also a chance the other player could be better. And so if there's even a chance of that, why not take it? I feel like it's how a lot of people feel at multiple positions. Quarterback obviously being one. Right guard. Right tackle. Yeah. I mean, That's what it comes down to. And that's why, again, we keep saying this word frustrating. And it's like, that is why, because we feel like we're just running into a wall again and again and again, trying to get through the wall. It's like, hey, there might be a door around the corner. Why don't we look around the corner and see, right? Like at least check if there's a door there. But the 49ers don't seem like they want to do it. One part about this game that I am encouraged by, Levin, is I think that the defense could really... This could be a game that is won entirely by the defense because Carson Wentz will self-destruct. If there is pressure, Carson Wentz just, he does some weird shit back there, Levin, to be totally honest with you. And if he gets pressured, especially from multiple players, this could be the game where the turnovers start to happen for the 49ers defense. I think they can really swing this thing if they just get after him. If Bosa does his thing and they get any pressure from anybody else, I think the 49ers can really just clamp this thing down on defense and make it super easy on the offense.
Yeah, the one thing that worries me is the screenplay to Taylor. Like, that's the thing I would be watching in this game. Jonathan Taylor's had a couple long receptions in recent weeks, and I feel like that's one way the Colts are probably going to try to thwart this, is where Bosa comes from, you know, wherever he rushes from, which is, you know, normally the right side of that line, but not every time. I feel like they're going to try to run. If the pass rush is being really effective and it's pretty much blowing up their plays, their counter to that will be, let's run a screen right into where that pass rush is coming from. And I think that we could see a big play come off of something like that in this week. And that's the play that worries me more than anything else is the screens.
Yeah, that's totally fair, but I don't think that's unique to the Colts. I think a lot of teams think, hey.
No, but Taylor is, the point is Taylor has been, he's had a couple big receptions in recent weeks. Like he has been putting up really good numbers in the receiving game. It seems to be something that's developed for him because he came in, you know, last year as a rookie, everybody was, yeah, he's a great runner, needs to work on his pass game. Well, he has done a lot better this year in passing. And it's why somebody like Nyheim Hines, who was basically a passing game specialist running back for them, hasn't really done much this year.
Taylor's fast as hell too. I want to point that out. He's a very, very good
deceptively
player.
Fast. He's one of those guys that like you see him, he looks like a bigger back. You don't expect him to be fast. And then you just, you're like, why didn't anybody get to him? Well, because he's fast as hell.
Right. Because he left you in his dust. Yeah. I think, you know, that's definitely a risk. I could easily see them hitting a couple of big plays on that. But I just think that Carson is, he's not good. And he's really one of those guys that he's going to put the ball. First of all, he's going to put his body, number one, and he's going to put the ball in harm's way. Carson Wentz plays football like he does not like his body. Like he will do whatever it takes in that play to gain one more yard, even if it involves him getting ground into the dirt, like, and turned into dust. And it's like, on the one hand, I kind of admire it because he's so competitive and that's awesome. But on the other hand, it's like, dude, what are you doing, man? Like, just relax, get to the next play. But he doesn't play like that. And it's certainly not going to change now. I don't care if he's with Frank Reich or not. That's why I want to see DeMeco Ryans get crazy aggressive, send Bosa, send Warner, send everybody a couple of times. If they hit a big play, okay. But I think that there could be some payoff there. And look, everything DeMeco has tried this year, I feel like he has gotten better and better and better. So I hope he's in his bag this week. You know, he's had a week to prepare too. So let's see what he comes up with.
Yeah, the defense, I don't want to put criticism on them. I was pretty critical after week one, but they've been lights out the last 4 weeks. But that said, I mean, Kyle even said in his presser, kind of need a little more turnovers from that department. I think they have, what, two on the year defensively?
Yes, they have the one, the pick six from Dre Greenlaw. When I can name all the turnovers.
Yeah.
They have the pick six from Greenlaw in week one, and then they have the fumble that Dante Johnson, the barnacle, forced. Right. And that's it.
Right. So they need more turnovers, and I kind of got on that on the instant reacts after this most recent game, that I'd like to see the defense gamble a little bit more. Like you said, send the house sometimes. Like, take that risk. In terms of the cornerbacks and especially the safeties, I would like to see them maybe bite a little bit more. You know, go earlier, try to jump a route here and there, and risk that it's a double move and suddenly the safety's not there for the over the top. You know what I mean? Like, that's what a lot of other defenses do, is they take calculated risks. You know, they watch the film. They know the tendencies of the offense. And when they think they see something where they know the route is going to be not trying to get over the top, they bite up and they come running up and they try to jump a route and get an interception where the quarterback didn't see them suddenly crashing down. We don't really see that out of this defense. This defense plays it safe all the time. And part of that is by design. I'm just saying I'd like to see them change it up a little bit and maybe go a little bit more risky. And the point I made in the instant reacts is, if the offense is going to be the offense that we've seen this year, you need those risks, because playing it safe and just stopping the other team from scoring won't be enough if your offense is struggling.
See, I think they look at it from the other direction. I think they say, we can't take those risks, because if we're wrong and they get a touchdown, that could be it for us, because our offense doesn't score any points. And that, to be honest, I can see both sides. I will say this. If it's T.Y. Hilton, don't go for the double move. He ain't going short. Okay. Like, I know he's banged up. He might not play. We'll see. But like, just if it's T.Y. Hilton, just assume he's going deep and maybe you have to give up the short completion. But I mean, other than that, that's the thing. Like, nobody else on this offense scares me beyond Taylor. Like, the Niners defense should be able to lock them down.
I don't know. I think that they're a little bit of an underrated skill player team. Pittman has emerged a good bit this year. He's been playing really well. Like I said, Taylor has developed as a pass catcher. You have a lot of other options there at running back. You know, you still have Mack on the team. You still have Hines, like I mentioned. You have T.Y. Hilton back now. Like, I think they have a lot of talent at the skill positions. It's about the rest of the offense and obviously the quarterback position to capitalize. And last week was T.Y. Hilton's first week back. So we don't know exactly what they're going to be, because T.Y. Hilton does change things, and T.Y. Hilton did quite well in his 1 week back.
And then he got hurt again. He didn't practice on Wednesday with a quad. So we'll see. Darius Leonard didn't practice on Wednesday either. That could be a big development too. Again, but you know, if they're back on Thursday, that obviously trends towards them playing. We'll see. What is your prediction for this game, sir?
I do think the Niners win. I don't think it's going to be very high scoring. I do think the offense is going to have struggles again. I think Kyle will probably come out trying to commit to the run a little bit more than he did last game. Last game, he pretty much abandoned the run, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, he didn't run it up the gut at all with Sermon after Sermon had 89 yards the previous week. I think you see Sermon get mixed in a little bit more and a little bit more diversity from the run game. And I think the Niners end up winning a pretty close game, but one that the Niners control pretty much the whole way. They just don't pull away.
Your instinct about the scoring is right on. Vegas puts the over-under at this game at 44. So they do not see a lot of points on either side. I'm interested to see if Jamichael Hasty can go and how much run he gets, because he is a guy, just due to his running style, even if the blocking isn't necessarily there, he can make people miss and he can break off an explosive run just by himself because he's so elusive. That'll be interesting to me how much they use him. I wouldn't mind seeing him on third down, right? Put Mitchell and Sermon in there on first and second down. Instead of having Juice be your third down running back, which I'm so tired of him getting so many friggin' targets in this offense. Like, he's not that good, okay? He's a great fullback, but he's a great fullback. You know, what's the old saying about fullbacks? If you need 2 yards, I'll get you three. If you need 4 yards, I'll get you three. Like, that's how they should be treated. I'm sorry. Let Hasty get in there on third down. He can catch some passes. He can make a play for you. So I'm interested to see if they mix him in. But I agree with what you said earlier. Like, this has got to be the week that things look different for this team and this offense. It's a bye week. They've had plenty of time to study up. There's no real excuses for them to continue to struggle. I think that they will continue to struggle. However, I think that it's going to be a low-scoring game, like you said, and I think the Colts are winning, because I think the Colts are going to make one or two explosive plays, and until the 49ers do it, I don't have confidence that they're going to.
I think this has been almost every week or game this year that we've predicted opposite.
Well, I'm trying not to be sour on the team, but, like, man, they're making it hard. Three straight losses, 10 out of the last 15 have been losses. I would like an easy game. Remember when the Niners would play on Sunday Night Football and just blow the doors off people? Remember that Browns game they played on Sunday Night Football where the first play of the game, Matt Breida took it 89 yards to the house and the game was basically over from that point on? Can we get one of those? Can we get one of those, please? I want Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth to be struggling with stuff to talk about at the end of this game because the Niners are killing them. That's what I want to see happen. I just don't think it will.
Is it going to be Al Michaels?
I actually don't know. Tirico did last week. I think Al Michaels was only taking 1 week off. I like Tirico a million times better, but that's just me.
I like them both. I'm fine if Tirico takes over. I mean, Al Michaels, he's up there.
This is last year. He wants to do the Super Bowl in LA and then be done.
Like, I mean, that's a whole different topic. But in terms of memorable moments for announcers, Al Michaels might have more than anybody else. I mean, yeah. Some infamous games he's gotten to do.
He definitely does. 1,000%. He's gotten a ton of memorable calls. He's never been one of my favorites, but
who's your favorite all time?
Well, I continue to say this and people always laugh at me. Gus Johnson. He makes it fun for me. He makes it fun because he calls a game and it feels like he's as excited about what happens as I am. And I like that. And I get that that's not everybody's thing. And I understand why. And that's fine. But just for me, like I was talking about, I can't remember if we were on the air or in a break. I think we were in a break. But one of my favorite movies ever is Deep Blue Sea. I love that movie. It's a terrible movie. It is not a good movie by any stretch, but I love it. And I acknowledge that Gus Johnson is not the best play-by-play announcer there is, but he's my favorite.
Maybe that's why you like me so much. That's an insult to me, by the way.
Self-owned. Those are rare.
No, like Gus Johnson, I think, is probably the best at basketball. Like the fact that he doesn't do the NCAA tournament anymore pisses me the hell off. Like he is built for the NCAA tournament. That said, my favorite all time is Pat Summerall, and it's not close.
He barely talks. How can he be your favorite?
Exactly. I don't need a play-by-play guy with a ego.
Well, I mean, how could he get a word in edgewise with John Madden there? But a lot of people liked Summerall for that reason.
He was good at baseball on the radio, too.
God, I have never heard Pat Summerall call a baseball game.
Dude, I only know he did baseball because I remember I was on the – we were driving. I can't remember what road trip this was, but I was driving. At one point, it was towards the end of his career, and I was like hours from home, and we were MLB, I think it was the playoffs, were going on. We turned it on. I was like, that's Pat Summerall. Why is Pat Summerall doing baseball?
Huh. Was somebody sick? What happened?
I think he did it regularly. I remember looking it up. This is like, you know, obviously 15, something like that years ago. So
yes, it would have to be.
I believe he did quite a bit of baseball on the radio.
Baseball on the radio is my favorite. I mean, baseball is my favorite sport, despite the fact that I cover football for a living. But that's probably because
you look like a dude that baseball was his favorite sport.
Okay, what the hell does that mean?
You're
what
scrawny.
The hell does that mean?
You're scrawny. You're not going to like the football field.
Well, I love football. Just because I would be snapped in two if I ever played in a real game doesn't mean I don't like it.
Yeah, you like it, but
Kyle Shanahan's a skinny dude. Jerk. All right.
Trying I'm to see what all Pat Summerall did.
Nope, too late. I'm ending the show. You pissed me off now.
Oh, I just learned something about Pat Summerall. I did not know he actually played.
Yeah, he was a kicker.
Huh. A fourth round pick.
Mitch Wishnowski-esque. Which, by the way, for anyone that says I don't have anything positive to say about the 49ers, I've been praising Mitch Wishnowski all season. The dude's killing it. He's got like six punts inside the 20. He's killing it right now. I was actually on the radio in Australia talking about Mitch Wishnowski. What do you think about that? I'm international, baby.
Good for you, bad for all the listeners, I guess.
All right. Enjoy the week, everybody. Enjoy the game. Rate, review, subscribe, please. It's a small thing you can do, but it makes a big, big difference for us. Go Niners. Let's hope they get a win this week, but I'm not holding my breath.